An anthology about the bad, the short-lived, and the forgotten shows and events in television history. This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Punisher! Control!
Tell me before I change my mind!
I give you Super Train!
Episode 462, Submission 321. Life on Mars, U.S. Life on Mars, U.S. aired on ABC from October 9th, 2008 to April 1st of 2009 for a total of 17 episodes.
So how about that, guys? It had its final episode on April Fool's Day.
All I can say is, here in the future, knowing what I know about the final episode, it's appropriate.
Let me just see what we have from 2008. Oh, we got, Stacked. Remember Stacked, the UK pilot of Karen Gillan? And then the 2008 Kaff and Kim US version that we did in a previous Lost in Translation. And, oh my God, all the way back to episode 5. Think Like a Cat. But we did cover in a mini-sode the Barack Obama commemorative plate.
Okay, I've been trying to forget a lot of the things you just mentioned. I'm trying to forget Stacked. Think Like a Cat, I'm trying to forget. You're bringing back all these horrible memories. Oh, and by the way, 17 episodes. That's just one more than your traditional crock block.
It's a baker's crock block.
What does Baker Mayfield have to do with this? Oh, by the way, he just got paid, so good on you. Baker's crock block. I'm going to have to put that one away for future reference. Okay, theme music here.
Well, I don't think we can legally use the theme music because didn't they just use the actual David Bowie Life on Mars? No?
They did not.
Oh.
They had one of those 15-second theme music stings that were big in 2008.
Well, they're still big now. Nobody does actual theme music anymore.
And besides that, we played in the year-end reel that we did last year, we played that intro.
That's true, we did.
Well, good. So I guess we're putting a theme in here.
My name is Sam Tyler. I was in an accident and I woke up in 1973. I don't know how or why I'm here, but whatever's happened, it's like I've landed on a different planet. Now maybe if I can work out the reason, I can get home.
Boy, that was a fun 15-second open, wasn't it, guys?
Oh, man, it tells you everything you need to know about this show. But, Chico, yep. Going all the way back to the mid-2000s, it was an exciting time in British television. Doctor Who came back, and also, while that was going on, we got a little show from England called Life on Mars, and it starred as the lead, someone who would go on to be on Doctor Who.
That would be in the lead role as Detective Sam Tyler. Sorry, Detective Chief Inspector Sam Tyler, John Sim. And he was hit by a car in 2006, and he woke up in 1973 Manchester, where he is apparently Detective Inspector Sam Tyler, owner of a Ford Granada, and inspector for the Manchester and Salford Police, which, of course, would go on to become the Greater Manchester Police, which is a thing here and now in the future, which is today.
By the way, fun fact, Sam Tyler's last name of Tyler is a reference to Rose Tyler from Doctor Who.
And remember, the reason why it gets the title Life on Mars is because when Sam Tyler wakes up in the past, what's playing in the song in the present when he gets hit in the car, and what's playing in the past in 1973 is Life on Mars by David Bowie.
And also there is the parallels of this feels like I'm on a different planet. The idea of the show itself comes from Matthew Graham and Ashley Farrow, who conceived it as far back as 1998 when they were sent to Blackpool to think of a new show idea. Matthew Graham said, back then, broadcasters just weren't comfortable with something like that. Something that wasn't set in the real world and that had a fantasy element to it. And according to Graham, the initial idea was for a humorous pre-Watershed show that mocked the styles and attitudes of the 1970s, with Neil Morrissey, of all people, as the central character. That would not have gotten out of pilot stage, whereas the actual show, Life on Mars, went on to run for 2 seasons, a spinoff, and an aborted spinoff. Not to mention adaptations in Russia, Spain, the Czech Republic, and Korea. And of course, 2 years after that show premiered, here in America. Now, they weren't going to go the coupling route or the Days Like These route and adapt scripts. They were going to take the basic overall premise and kind of sort of do their own thing with it. John Sim was approached on doing the role of Sam Tyler in the U.S., but he didn't want to make that commitment, and neither did Philip Glenister, the detective chief inspector over Sam Tyler, Gene Hunt, for 2 reasons. 1, they had family issues, and 2, they didn't want to seem like they were crazy.
Makes sense.
So Josh Applebaum and Andre Nemec, who would go on to write Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, teamed up with Scott Rosenberg, who is known for writing episodes of Tales from the Crypt, as well as the movies Con Air and Gone in 60 Seconds, to adapt a show about a Los Angeles detective who was hit by a car in 2006 and woke up in 1972. The pilot did not air, but it is available on YouTube. And an interesting point, the accident that sent Sam Tyler to the past happened in front of Walt Disney Music Hall. And when he woke up, that wasn't there.
Oh, let me take a good guess as to why they used Walt Disney Music Hall in the pilot. What network was this supposedly for?
Your guess is as good as mine.
I'll give you a hint. It has a B and a C in the title, but not an N.
CBC?
CBS? Yeah, think about what you said, Greg, huh? You thought you were going to narrow it down to ABC. No, my friend, you forgot about CBS.
No, I'm thinking about the B and the C minus the first letter in the thing.
Yeah, we get it. The corporate synergy of ABC and Disney. I get it.
Now, among the people who were cast were Rachelle Lefebvre as Annie Cartwright, the lone female detective in the department who forges a mystic bond with the mysterious detective and teams with him to track a serial killer, and Calm Meany, a.k.a. Chief Miles O'Brien, to play Lieutenant Gene Hunt. ABC took one look at the pilot and decided to buy the series on the condition that they reshoot the pilot, on account of they just heard of tax deals in New York that would facilitate shooting in New York. So they moved the pilot setting from Los Angeles to New York and cast as Annie Cartwright Gretchen Mol, who would go on to be in a future entry, Girls Club.
Although in this series, she's referred to as Annie Norris.
Yes, or No Balls Norris.
No Balls. Wait, hold on a second. No Balls, we're going to be talking about that hometown commercials volume 5. Tease for that.
And in the role of Gene Hunt, they cast legendary actor Harvey Keitel.
Oh, Harvey Keitel. You know what? We don't even need to say anything about Harvey Keitel. Y'all know who Harvey Keitel is. Legend of the Silver Screen.
And I think this is the first time we're talking about him.
That's right. Although he was referenced in that one episode of The Critic. Remember that, Chico?
I do.
The time has come for us to make love. What do you think of me naked?
Next to be cast was Detective Ray Carling, an ambitious and short-tempered detective played by The Sopranos' Michael Imperioli.
That's right, Christopher from The Sopranos.
Chris Skelton, a kind but naive junior detective played by Jonathan Murphy, who nowadays is doing more writing than acting. However, you can see him in such shows as Future Entry, American Dreams. Is that a Future Entry? I don't know.
I don't think so. That was on like 3 or 4 seasons.
Okay, never mind. But you can see Jonathan Murphy in such shows as Ghost Whisperer, NCIS Los Angeles, House. He's been all over the place. And rounding out the cast in the lead role of Sam Tyler, Irish actor Jason O'Mara, who was in episodes of Vegas, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., The Man in the High Castle, and Future Entry, Terra Nova.
Oh, Terra Nova. But also, Chica, he's been the voice of Bruce Wayne / Batman in several DC animated movies, including Justice League War, Son of Batman, Justice League Throne of Atlantis, Batman vs. Robin, Batman Bad Blood, Justice League vs. Teen Titans, Justice League Dark, The Death and Reign of Superman, Batman Hush, and last but not least, Justice League Dark, Apocalypse War. That totally did not take me 3 takes to do. Don't blame me, they spelled it terribly. Damn you, whoever DC wrote that spelling.
At least you didn't say Darkseid.
Oh god, don't get me started on that shit.
Darkseid! What up?
The story begins in 2008 when Sam Tyler is hunting a serial killer in New York City.
New York City!
Yes!
I love when a plan comes to action perfectly. Thank you so much. Oh, and we're going to put the sound in there too. Just, you know.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Yeah,
I know.
No, we're putting in there. Just let the audience know that.
New York City!
And after following a lead and keeping his eye off the street, Sam Tyler is struck by a car, and when he comes to, he wakes up in 1973, where he has to solve a murder that is eerily similar to a case he was investigating in 2008.
But here's the kicker. You know how he realizes he's not 2008 anymore?
Go ahead, Greg.
He looks up and sees something, and he's like, no effing way. And you know what it is, guys? It's the Twin Towers of World Trade Center.
They pulled out all the stops for this pilot. You can tell, even by the guest list, playing Detective Maya Daniels, who is Sam Tyler's girlfriend, Lisa Bonet.
Ooh, Lisa Bonet.
The once in future Mrs. Lenny Kravitz.
Well, also the once in future Mrs. Jason Momoa.
Yes. But also, let's not forget, her daughter is Catwoman, Zoe Kravitz.
And is this the first time we've talked about Lisa Bonet? I'm pretty sure it is.
I am also pretty sure it is. Then we have as Captain Bellow, Clark Peters. He was in such fare as The Wire, The Five Bloods, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and a movie I fell in love with while I was on vacation a while back, I Want to Dance with Somebody.
Oh, the Whitney Houston movie.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
It's a good movie, man.
Okay, well, I was so-so on seeing it, but now that you've given its recommendation, I'll give it a chance.
And the thing is, if Chico didn't like it, you know what Whitney Houston would say?
Oh, no.
I'm using the sound there. I'm not even saying it.
Kiss my ass!
All right, that's what I need.
We miss you, Whitney. Oh, but episode 2's title. This is an incredible title. I love this. The Real Adventures of the Unreal Sam Tyler. Sam is in 1973. 2008 only exists in flashes of Sam's memory, assisted by a mysterious robot. A suspect in a series of deadly armed robberies of check cashing stores, Trent, is picked up but let loose for lack of evidence. Trent then attempts another robbery and is killed by Hunt, but not before Trent shoots June, the precinct secretary, at the scene, when a witness states that Trent was escorted by uninformed police going into the store being robbed. It becomes a corruption issue, and it turns out June was connected to Trent, and this is how the case gets solved.
A couple of names in this episode, playing a sizable Ted in a recurring role, John Cena Tiempo. No, not John Cena, Greg.
Well, if he was on this show, we'd never see him.
Yes, John Cena Tiempo. He was in The Sopranos, Magic City, and Tulsa King. Also, in this episode, playing Kim Trent is Pablo Schreiber, who plays Master Chief on Halo.
Oh, man. And season 2 just premiered.
Heather Matarazzo, well-known actress, plays June in this episode. She was in The Princess Diaries, which is one of Kiesel's favorite movies, and Barbara in The Devil's Advocate, which is another one of Kiesel's favorite movies. And also making a low-key Hall of Fame case, playing a character named Dax Benson, Patrick Noonan from Supertrain.
Somebody from Supertrain was on this 30 years later almost? Wow.
Crazy.
Well, I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just, like, real surprised.
Episode 3. My Maharishi is bigger than your Maharishi. When a decorated Vietnam War vet is beat to death, Sam's precinct is pushed to the brink to find his killers, but not everyone may be happy with the results they find.
Now, Gene Hunt wants to find and lynch the obvious, and now I'm quoting, pacifist hippie scum suspects. Sam insists to look for evidence and thus discovers that Jimmy's dearly missed father also led a secret life, which costs him any sympathy from bigot Ray. Tyler then realizes he's returned to the very block and house where he lived for a while in between his dad's many moves. A guru inspires the theory that his supposed future background may be the actual illusion he's about to wake up from. Okay, so his father, Vic Tyler, played by Dean Winters. He played Ryan O'Reilly on Oz, but we would probably remember him from his stint as Dennis Duppy on 30 Rock.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he was on 30 Rock.
He was the Peeper King.
Yeah. And he's on Girls 5 Eva.
I haven't seen the new season yet. Don't tell me anything about it.
Well, I gotta reach my dad's Netflix account because season 3 is on Netflix now.
And playing Jimmy, that's young Jimmy, Robin Lord Taylor from Gotham. He's the future Penguin, a.k.a. Oswald Cobblepot.
So if you're keeping score at home, we've referenced a Batman, a Catwoman, and a Penguin.
Now, okay, I got to get this anecdote right. I was listening to Gilbert Gottfried's podcast, recent episode. Okay.
Time out. Are we going to talk about freaking Cesar Romero and the Orange Wedges?
No. I was listening to the most recent episode, which is a re-release of the Barbara Feldon episode. And she was talking about Gilbert Gottfried was, I think, supposed to be the Penguin or tried out to be the Penguin in one of the Batman releases. I don't know if it's the theatrical release or the cartoon or whatnot. And obviously he didn't get it. But also, since we're talking about Barbara Feldon, how about this little nugget? Do you know who was originally supposed to play Maxwell Smart on Get Smart?
Who?
You're going to love this. Tom Poston.
Oh, that would be great.
Are you kidding me?
No, this was mentioned on Gilbert's podcast when he interviewed Barbara Feldon, I think like 11, 12 years ago at this point. Absolutely 100% true. And the reason Tom Poston wasn't selected as Maxwell Smart is because Poston was under contract with ABC and Don Adams was under contract with NBC. And obviously Get Smart aired at least the first four seasons on NBC.
Could you imagine the alternate history if Tom Poston was Maxwell Smart?
Yes, but I don't want to swerve in another direction when you guys are doing such a good job with this series. Maybe Don Adams then appears on Match Game Hollywood Squares and has a coma in Christmas in 1983.
Huh? What? What are you telling me, Chief? I'm not paying attention, huh?
Did I mention episode 4? Oh.
No, we're talking about okay. Barbara Feldon and yeah.
Yeah. Episode 4. Have you seen your mother baby standing in the shadows? Sam arrests a man for accosting his mother only to find out he's a loan shark and she owes him $1,000. When his mother doesn't want to prosecute, she unknowingly leads Sam to fall out with Annie.
We got a legend on this episode. Playing Elliot Casso? First time we've mentioned this guy, I do believe. Robert Klein. Legendary comedian.
That's right. But also, I want to mention this because I don't know how many chances I'm going to have to mention this. He was the mayor in Sharknado 2. He was the mayor of New York City in Sharknado 2.
A career-defining role.
A couple more names I want to mention here. Playing a character named Adrian is Odette Annable, of course, from The House. And then you have Don Pulisi. Not a well-known actor. He's known for Taking Woodstock, I Ate the Band, and Wonder. You know who he plays?
One of my favorite singers of all time, especially from the early 70s. Just want to put that out there.
Jim Croce.
Oh.
How can you not like Time in a Bottle? Just saying.
Episode 5. Things to do in New York. When you think you're dead, Sam partners up with Fletcher, his future police mentor, in 1973 to find a Puerto Rican man accused of throwing a black girl off the roof of a building, a case that has the black community up in arms and demanding retribution. But oh, guys, guest starring in this episode. And you know what? I think this is another case where we're talking about this person for the first time. Whoopi Goldberg.
I think we've referred to her once. Maybe not for a specific show, but I'm pretty sure we've mentioned her in the past.
Also, in this episode, a couple of names of note. Playing Suede, Chad L. Coleman from The Orville. Playing Denise Watkins, Renee Elise Goldsberry from Girls 5 Ever.
That's right, two Girls 5 Ever references in this episode.
And playing Perp number two. We didn't have a name for Perp number one, but we have a name for Perp number two. Babs Olusanmokun.
What does this person do?
He's Dr. M'Benga from Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Oh! I know who you're talking about. Yeah, the doctor. The one who's not Chapel.
No, Chapel's a civilian nurse.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, she's not a doctor yet. She hasn't become a doctor until, like, Star Trek the Motion Picture. Forgot.
Correct.
Guys, I want to propose a special theory. I know we've done, like, some real weird stuff in terms of, you know, connecting people to TV shows and, you know, making amazing discoveries. I'm doing the first It Was a Thing on TV theory. Follow me. People who are number two, go to bigger and better things. Think about it. We just talked about Babs. I can't pronounce that last name.
Olusan Mokun.
God bless you. He is perp number two. Who was stripper number two on that episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Tiffany Haddish.
Number twos are bound for stardom. And another one, and I just saw this on Person, Place, or Thing sometime in the last week or two. Melissa Peterman in the movie Fargo, she was hooker number two.
What?
So don't tell me my theory is incorrect. Number twos go on to bigger and better things.
Now, hold on a second. Do you know who played an episode of Farver Dowling Mysteries? You know who played a character named Kid Number Two? Tom Gottlieb from You Don't Know Jack.
Oh, my God. Oh, the guy from Whacked Out Sports.
Yes.
Wow. But, yeah, she played hooker number two, Melissa Peterman, in Fargo, the movie. So there's my first and maybe my last It Was a Thing on TV theory. Number twos have better careers than the number ones. You're welcome. Next episode.
Episode 6, Tuesday's Dead. After a wild birthday party for Ray at the precinct house, Sam receives a phone call from his mother saying he has until 2 o'clock to pull out of his coma before the doctor will pull the plug. Just as Lieutenant Hunt walks in with news of a hostage situation at a local hospital, they have until 2 o'clock before the man claims he will kill the hostage. Sam believes he must intervene to save his own life in 2008 and vows that no one will die today.
Playing a nurse, Marcella Lowry, who we would remember as Jamal's mom from Ghost Rider, and also the principal on City Guys.
Is this the first time we've ever referenced Ghost Rider on this podcast?
I believe it is.
Well, that's great. And you know what? It was all about Grandma Jenkins on Ghost Rider.
That's the character she played, Grandma Jenkins.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God. I didn't realize. I thought you said Jamal's mother. Oh, okay.
That's an instant Grandma. Correction, by the way.
Okay, well, good thing we caught it before we did the correction next week. Episode 7, The Man Who Sold the World. While investigating a child's kidnapping, Sam discovers some disturbing information about his father, as well as the reason he disappeared for good on the day of Sam's 4th birthday party.
He sees his father. He disappeared at his birthday party tomorrow. When he becomes 4, he's arrested for collecting the ransom money demanded by infamously violent Italian brothers for the baby of Carl and Janice Crushpain. He believes Vic's story he ignored what he was collecting and just paid off gambling debts, and gets him released provided he wears a wire when delivering the cash. That goes bloodily wrong, but the baby is found, and Sam stays to protect his mother and his toddler self, but as the party in the park approaches, so does a grim truth. I just want to mention this guy's character name, Teddy Kaluka. He plays a character named Uncle Butchie.
Butchie!
Thank you.
Butchie!
And I don't know if I told you guys this, there's a Comic-Con coming to Cleveland in April. Butch Hartman's gonna be there.
Oh, God.
Butchie!
It's taking every fiber in me not to go there and get him to sign a screenshot from Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. I'm not even joking about that. I just want to see his reaction when he sees 19-year-old him on Match Game Hollywood Squares and says, "What?" Yeah, after all this Jimmy Neutron stuff, I've got this picture of me as a 19-year-old, and this dipshit from Cleveland wants me to sign it. I'm
pretty
tempted.
Accurate.
What? Pretty accurate about the dipshit part?
Yeah, pretty.
But anyhow, I'm tempted. The only thing stopping me is, do I really want to waste at least like $80 or $90 between parking, admission, and the autograph itself just to do this stupid little thing? I'm Mike Klaus, not Greg Diener. I respect money, except in the case of Earl from Dinosaurs, the NECA doll. Baby Sinclair from Dinosaurs, the NECA doll. And Alf, the NECA figurine. I don't care about money when it comes to that. But $100 for Butch Hartman's autograph and to get his reaction to a screenshot of him from 40 years ago. Don't know if I'm going to spend that type of money.
Episode 8. Take a look at the law of it. A long-standing competition between Lieutenant Hunt and Anthony Nunzio of the 144th Precinct heats up as both investigate a bank robbery by the Russian mob. Meanwhile, Sam has a liaison at the file, unaware of the woman's true identity.
Playing Anthony Nunzio, another Sopranos veteran, Vincent Curatola. He played Johnny Sack.
Oh, Johnny Sack.
Another name playing Maria Bellinger is Maggie Siff, best known as playing Dr. Tara Knowles on, I didn't know there were 79 episodes of Sons of Anarchy, but she was on 79 of them.
That was on for a while, Sons of Anarchy.
I know, but the thing is, like every FX series, don't they only do like 10 episodes a season? Maybe 13, but even still, if it's 13, 13 times 6 is 78. So that implies there's at least 7 seasons of Sons of Anarchy.
I think the last season of The Bear was like more than 13 episodes. Which, by the way, I started watching.
By the way, they just quietly renewed The Bear for a 4th season.
That's right. They're going to film it back to back with the 3rd season.
That's right.
I'm kind of excited about that. Yeah.
So am I. Oh, wait. She was also, Maggie Siff, also in Billions.
Oh, Billions.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget that's a Robin Boyette joint. Episode 9, The Dark Side of the Mook. A mysterious phone call from a tipster leads Detective Sam Tyler to a headless body. A severed head is delivered to the precinct at the same time, thus leading to the discovery of a series of gruesome decapitations that might involve Detective Carling's brother, Eddie. The detectives are interviewed by someone tied to the Ares Project.
We have a name on this. Playing Eddie Carling, the gang leader who was a police academy dropout, Eric Balfour from 28 episodes of 24.
That's right. He was on 24.
He was also on episodes of Charmed, The Offer, and 6 Feet Under.
Episode 10, Let All the Children Boogie. When rock star Sebastian Grace receives a death threat, Sam and Chris are sent to provide him with police protection. Chris later accompanies Sebastian and one of his groupies, Rocket Girl, to wait for UFOs in the New Jersey Meadowlands, but Sebastian is arrested for murder when Rocket Girl disappears. Sam also has to try and cover up his fling with Maria before Gene figures out who his partner in the file was.
Couple names playing Sebastian Grace, the rock star. Cheyenne Jackson, known for playing multiple roles on American Horror Story. Danny Baker on 30 Rock. 3 episodes of Glee and 53 episodes, that's all of the episodes, on Call Me Cat. And then we have as Frank Wyatt, Robert Clohessy from Future Entry, One of the Boys, and also in a movie that Keisla and I just finished watching, 2012's The Avengers.
We're not going to talk about the Sorcerer? We got to talk about this guy because an absolute legend played the Sorcerer in this episode, Wallace Shawn. Where do we start with him? I think we got to start with the Princess Bride, but also remember, he voiced Bertram, Stewie Griffin's brother, on Family Guy.
Are we not going to mention My Dinner with Andre?
I think that is the perfect thing for you to mention. So I didn't want to burst your bubble, and I think Chico respectfully didn't want to burst your bubble, so I knew you were going to say that.
Hello, Clueless has entered the chat.
Even Young Sheldon's entered the chat. I forgot he's a semi-regular on Young Sheldon.
Toy Story has entered the chat because he's the voice of Rex.
Well, again, as I said, legend. So many things we could talk about, starting first and foremost with Princess Bride and also Bertram on Family Guy and even getting into young Sheldon. Needless to say, an absolute legend.
Episode 11, Home is Where You Hang Your Holster. A city councilman who was arrested and brought into the 125th on prostitution charges privately reveals to Sam that he's from 2009 and knows the way home. But he is murdered in the middle of the precinct house before Sam can find out the secret. Hunt locks down the squad house to investigate the murder. Ray and Annie were both out of the house at the time and are sent out to investigate leads on the outside, but squabble over how much authority a policewoman should be given in investigating a crime.
Ray and Annie are forced to work together outside the precinct due to the lockdown as a result of the shooting, where she meets Ray's wife for the first time. Ray's wife, Denise, is played by Laura Benanti from, among other things, Smash and Supergirl. She plays Supergirl's Krypton mom.
Throwing another name out there. Playing Jerry, no last name, just Jerry in this episode, is Jason Kravitz. He was a regular panelist on the Oxygen version of I've Got a Secret back in 2000, but you probably know him a little bit better as Assistant District Attorney Richard Bay on The Practice back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Episode 12, The Simple Secret of the Note in Us All. The squad tries to solve the murder of newspaper columnist Joey Conway after learning that Conway had visited a gallery owned by Tony Crane, a man whom Sam has arrested in the 2000s for a very similar crime. Sam becomes an advocate for the 1973-style vigilante policing he's usually fighting against. While the media glare has Hunt uncharacteristically insisted on a strictly by-the-book investigation, the rest of the precinct believe the murderer is a restaurant owner whose business was failing because of a bad review in Conway's column.
Playing Dimitri Pontos, the restaurateur who is ultimately responsible for his murder, Peter Apple, known for Luck, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Crash the System, which is a miniseries. Bigger names still than that is the actress who played Angela, Danai Gurira.
Wait, what did you say her name was?
Danai Gurira.
No, the character name.
What the character. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Angela.
Angela.
Angela. Danai Gurira, who played Angela, played Okoye in Black Panther. And then we have some guy named Michael J. Berg, who ends up playing Truman Capote.
He's no Philip Seymour Hoffman, I'll say that. Episode 13, Revenge of Broken Jaw. While the squad tries to find a place to watch the Muhammad Ali-Ken Norton rematch, student radicals from the Weaver Underground target the police with bomb threats, and it all becomes all too personal to Hunt, who loses several friends in the aftermath. As the investigation heats up, Sam, Annie, and Hunt uncover mysterious connections to one of the students and a political science professor. The bomb threats continue as Hunt, suspiciously secretive, attempts to discover the professor's possible connection to the Weaver Underground's dead leader. Is the motivation politics or revenge? And do the Weathermen have the right target? With the 125 walking a dangerous tightrope to discover the target of the next bomb, the case takes a totally unforeseen but deadly turn.
On this episode, there is a bar called Glenister's. That bar is named after the actor who played Gene Hunt in the original BBC version of Life on Mars, Philip Glenister.
Playing Pat Olson in this episode is Janelle Maloney, best known for playing Donna Moss on The West Wing, 150 episodes. But also, since we've been talking constantly, it seems, in this episode about people who are on The Sopranos, we have another person playing Rooney in this episode is Arthur Nassarella. He played Carlo Gervasi on 28 episodes. And also, since we mentioned Billions earlier, he was on 11 episodes, Bruno Caparello.
Episode 14, Coffee, Tea, or Annie. When a Pan-Atlantic air hostess turns up dead, Annie volunteers for a dangerous undercover mission posing as the murdered woman to help solve the second in a possible series of brutal homicides. Then, after an unlikely suspect is uncovered, an invitation to a lurid swingers party leads to an evening full of sensational surprises, not just for Annie and Sam, who attend as a couple, but Lieutenant Hunt also, who arrives with a special guest to mix it up.
Woo!
Juicy sexual escapades bring the swingers party to a fever pitch. But will the murderer be revealed? Finally, Annie confronts Hunt with the courage of her convictions about her future at the 125.
We got a little bit of everything for us guys. Playing Lincoln Hart in this episode, this is for Greg and Chico. Is Mark Lynn Baker? Do I really need to say anything else?
Cousin Larry!
Yeah, Cousin Larry. But then, for me, as Rita in this episode, is Gina Gershon. We best know her from Showgirls. And this is where I talk about the time I sat next to Joe Esterhaas, the writer of Showgirls, at Hardball in 2002. Yes, this is my personal wings. I will do this every time Gina Gershon or Elizabeth Berkley appears on this podcast. Get used to it.
So this is the second time we talked about Gina Gershon, because she was also in Cop Rock. One more until we can make a case for her abduction. But also, guys, Vice's Sex Before the Internet just did an episode about Showgirls.
Okay, hold on. I got to set my DVR real fast. Wait, when did this air? Did this air like in the last week or so?
Yeah, it aired in the last week. I saw a promo for it during Dark Side of the Ring.
Okay, so it's going to most likely re-air sometime in the next few days. Good.
And speaking of Dark Side of the Ring, I really need to watch that Buff Bagwell episode. I've been waiting to see it. I haven't gotten a chance to see it yet.
Another name on this episode, playing a character named Carol, Kelly Goodish from Law & Order SVU, Detective Amanda Rollins.
Episode 15, All the Young Dudes. When Sam poses as a streetwise tough to infiltrate a vicious New York City gang led by Irishman Jimmy McManus, who is suspected of truck hijacking, he's pushed to the limit not to blow his cover, and he reveals a much darker side. A bare-knuckled fistfight with gang member, a late-night deal to buy a truckload of stolen VCRs, and even time behind bars at his own precinct are all necessary elements of Sam's scam. But can he keep up the ruse when he's told to shoot a bound and gagged woman, and his attraction to McManus's sister also seems to be part of a recipe for disaster. But Chico, playing that sister of McManus, is the real-life wife of Jason O'Mara. I know this is going to bring a smile to your face, so just say it.
Paige Turco.
That's right, and you know what we best know her for.
April O'Neil in two of the first three Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies.
Yes. Episode 16. Everyone knows it's Wendy. I make a joke about this title, but everyone knows it's Wendy. What title is that? Oh, I guess.
Wait, you said, what type of title is that?
Yeah.
You've never heard that song? Everyone knows it's Wendy. Dum, dum,
oh, no,
dum,
I've never heard that.
I'm surprised you've never heard of that. It's a song from, I'm guessing, the late 60s, maybe early 70s. Yeah, everyone knows it's Wendy.
Okay, well, that makes sense because, I mean, episode one was Out Here in the Fields, and that's a reference to a line in Teenage Wasteland.
By the association, just called Wendy. But yeah, like I said, very popular song from the late 60s. And I'm like literally just like sang like a good part of it there for you guys. It's not like there's some sort of hidden meaning about farting or something, Greg. It's an actual song. Well, I don't know what you thought was laughing at when you said everyone thinks it's Wendy. Or everyone knows it's Wendy. I thought maybe you thought somebody had too much gas. Maybe William Conrad showed up from Fat Man 66. And had some problems with that Danish, and everyone knew why it was Wendy.
Well, it would be a crossover, because by this point, we'd be at Fat Man 73.
Batman 73. Oh my gosh. Let's just add more shows to our ever-expanding network. We're going to have Batman 66 and then the reboot Batman 73. Boy, I can't wait till we get to Batman 81.
Following Irish gangster Jimmy McManus' shooting of Ray and Chris, crime fighting has gotten extremely personal, like the 125th. When McManus is murdered outside the neighborhood bar, and FBI agent Franklin Morgan is sent to the precinct, both sides of the law suspect Sam of the murder, leaving him to question his own innocence. With the evidence stacking up against him, Sam must rely on his friends at the precinct to bend the rules as he tenaciously searches for the real killer.
Peter Green, from the last episode, returns as Jimmy McManus. Yes, he returns to this episode just to be killed. But playing Dr. Clifford Dorsett is Scott Adsit from 30 Rock and Big Hero 6.
How many people from the cast of 30 Rock did they get for this show? That's got to be like three mentions of 30 Rock.
Well, they did shoot both shows in New York City.
If Judah Freelander shows up in the last episode, I'm going to be dead.
This actor didn't do anything of consequence, but I just want to mention it for one reason. You'll figure it out when I mention this. Playing Detective Rizzo, it's sort of kind of a reverse Tony Danza. Playing Detective Rizzo is an actor named Steve Rizzo. So maybe in everything he appears in, he plays somebody with the last name Rizzo. I don't know. I just noticed that and wanted to throw that out.
Now, hold on. When you said playing Detective Rizzo, I thought you were going to say it was played by Rizzo the Rat from The Muppets.
Don't make me throw this Earl Sinclair NECA figurine through my computer.
And now the final episode, Life is a Rock. Sam wakes up after dreaming about his 2008 apartment with 1973 characters and is told by his hippie neighbor, Wendy, that he's most likely closer to going back. Oh, so that explains why the previous episode is called Everyone Knows It's Windy. Later on, a mysterious caller offers Sam a chance to return to 2008. All he needs to do is complete three tasks, but a confusing set of circumstances inside and out of the 125 makes him think twice about whether he even wants to go back. And at the end of the episode, the final truth about Sam's life is revealed. So, okay, Chico, what is the big twist in the finale?
Before I give you the big twist in the finale of Life on Mars, let me tell you what the twist was in the original Life on Mars. Everybody at the GSP is in danger, but Sam Tyler wakes up and is alive, but he finds his 2006 life rather boring, so he goes up on the roof, runs toward the edge of the roof and jumps in the hope that he is able to return to 1973 and save his friends. Of course, at the end of Ashes to Ashes, which is the sequel series to Life on Mars, we all realize that Sam Tyler and basically everybody in that police precinct is dead. That's what happens in England. In America, ABC decided not to go through with a second season of Life on Mars after ratings began to drop precipitously. But it still gave producers a chance to tie everything up. And so it turns out that everybody in the precinct is a figment of Sam Tyler's imagination. And Sam Tyler is actually in deep sleep in interstellar travel in the year 2035.
Wow. So literally, the show's title is Life on Mars, and he's going to Mars. But here's the twist, okay? Here's another twist. Harvey Keitel's character is revealed to be Sam's dad, and you know what his name is? Are you ready to know what his name is, Chico?
I have a feeling I know what his name is, but go ahead.
What his real name is, you're gonna flip out, okay? He is Major Tom Tyler. Get it?
Oh.
This is ground control to Major Tom. Yup.
Space Oddity, another David Bowie song. For some reason, the show quickly lost viewers after everybody tuned into it on October 9th for the premiere. It got an 8.2 rating, a 14 share, a 3.8 rating in the demo, a 10 share in the demo. It was number 3 for the night and tied for 15th overall for the week. ABC was really happy about those numbers, and people were happy for what they saw. I have a review here from Entertainment Weekly's Gillian Flynn, who said, "Life on Mars, like Mad Men, makes the long-ago era feel both alien and nostalgic, like in the sweet moment where Sam wanders into a record store and just beams. O'Mara invests Sam with a tricky mix of shell shock and sensibility. Being the pragmatic detective he is, he begins working a 1973 murder that may be linked to his 2008 serial killer case, buzzing with doubt all the while. Sam believes he must be in a coma and hopes that once he stops dreaming so realistically, he'll wake up. Details. There are only so many details," he mutters. And as he scans the mad bustle of a New York City street, we all settle in for the duration. So yeah, it seems like audiences may very well have gotten it. Of course, playing on Thursday nights on ABC helped because, as we know, in 2008, ABC owned Thursday nights with Ugly Betty, Grey's Anatomy, and now Life on Mars. It narrowly beat another feature entry, 11th Hour, and a new episode of ER. So people were genuinely intrigued, I guess you could say. But then the wheels came off because it lost almost half of the audience of Grey's Anatomy the next week. And for a while, it held into the 8 millions to the 9 millions until a hiatus, which saw it come back in January to 8.89 million, and then ratings continued to drop. 6.02 million from February 4th to 5.14 for February 11th, and the mid 5 million range for the rest of the series' run. Ultimately, ABC decided they were just going to leave Life on Mars on Mars. If you ever wanted to see Life on Mars, there are options. The complete series has been released on DVD, and if you can't be bothered with cumbersome physical media, you can watch it on Apple TV. Of course, it will cost you. Life on Mars in the UK, like we said before, got another season to wrap up the Sam Tyler line. It spun off Ashes to Ashes, which featured Keely Hawes as another detective with the Greater Manchester Police, who, for some reason or another, got knocked back into time, this time to the 1980s. But she finds out about the Sam Tyler case, and, well, we spoiled it before. Turns out Alex Drake, Keely Hawes' character in Ashes to Ashes, and everybody else in the precinct are dead, and Gene Hunt is actually a bit of an angel character who sees to it that everybody in the precinct gets to the afterlife.
Oh, I never would have expected that.
So there was an epic universe in the UK and in America. Life on Mars was just the thing on TV that was lost in translation.
Well, guys, we got two things in this one a week episode. But first, before we get to the Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour, I think we're well overdue for a Russell Westbrook update. Russell Westbrook, he can sure score triple doubles, but he sure as hell can't think straight when he's trying to make a pass. It's the Russell Westbrook update. The reason we haven't done a Russell Westbrook update is because we have some bad news. Back on March 1st, against the Wizards, Russ injured his hand, and so he's been unable to play for the Clippers. But since the All-Star break, let me just recap the five games he played for his injury. On February 22nd against the Thunder, he scored 2 points in a 129-107 loss. On February 23rd against Memphis, he scored 13 points in a 101-95 win. Against the Kings on February 25th, he scored 8 points in a 123-107 loss. Against the Lakers on February 28th, he scored 8 points in a 116-112 loss. And before his injury against the Wizards on March 1st, he scored 6 points in a game the Clippers won by 25. And damn it, guys, the Wizards are ruining everything, guys. They're ruining good basketball. They're ruining our Russell Westbrook update. They're constantly winning on Shaq to the full. Just terrible.
That's terrible.
But as long as he's back before the playoffs, that's what matters. And you know what, guys? Pretty soon, in April, we're going to have another update returning. And Mike, are you excited? We're going to have the return of the Joey Gallo report in a few weeks.
Give the nice listeners a preview as to what you told us earlier before we started recording.
Oh, he is hitting like, what, 3-for-21 in spring training right now for the Nationals?
3-for-25, a 120 batting average. But beyond that, what was the announcement made about his presence on his current team?
Oh, the Nationals just named him the starting first baseman for opening day. Mike, you're excited by this, right? You can't wait for Joey Gallo to play first base in Washington.
Somehow Joey Gallo is going to be the starting first baseman for the Washington Nationals. Now, admittedly, they're the Washington Nationals, but seriously? Nobody else could start? Just saying. I know Greg doesn't want to hear that, but somebody's got to break the news to him.
He's going to make history. He's going to have 60 hits and 50 home runs.
I'd like to see him do a different type of history. I'd like him to get 40 hits and 50 home runs. Somehow he has more home runs than hits.
Now, hold on, Chico. Is Kiesel in the room? I want to get her thoughts about Joey Gallo. No? He probably wouldn't even know who he is because she didn't know who Roy Campanella was.
Hey, what happened 40 years ago on Match Game Hollywood Squares, I wonder?
No, I want to keep on hearing about Kieslin didn't know about Roy Campanella. That was really, really good. Yeah, when we were talking about the Colbys, didn't know who Roy Campanella is. And Greg and I are like, seriously?
You don't know who Roy Campanella?
No, that, I don't think gender has anything to do with it. Greg and myself are men of refined taste. That's what it has to do with. Here's your Match Game Hollywood Squares update.
Bet Roy Campanella loved all the Match Game Hollywood Squares out in 1984.
Yeah, Roy Campanella would have been alive in 1984, I'm sure.
He was alive in 1984. I think he was alive till 93. Yeah, he was alive till June of 93, silly.
Okay, so, you know, Roy Campanella could have legit enjoyed Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. Probably didn't, but he could have.
It's time for this weekend Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour History.
We're up to week 21 now.
The 100th episode aired this week.
So, yay, we hit the triple-digit mark. And among the people in the squares this week, we have James B. Seeking, who just celebrated his 91st birthday in the last week or so. I didn't know he was 91, but it makes sense if you think about it. America's sweetheart, Nedra Voles. America's ultimate sweetheart, Leonard Fry. Was Leonard Fry actually America's sweetheart in 1984 after Mr. Smith got canceled? Sure. Lois Hamilton. Fanny Flagg. Ooh, Match Game regular there, Fanny Flagg. America's ass in 1984, Tom Villard. Or alternatively, America's third sweetheart in 1984. Anna Stewart and Carlo Imperato from Fame. In terms of happenings this week, again, like last week, we did not have any big money wins. So at this point, we're looking at 10 straight episodes in a row where nobody got the big money. Admittedly, there is one episode that's missing that didn't air this week, the 100th episode of all things. Gonna guess that he did not win the big money in the head-to-head match, because I'm sure it would have been noted in the notes. But yeah, we're in a very dry streak. Coming up next week, another one of our favorite weeks. I think this is actually among the first episodes we got introduced to when Buzzer started showing Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour about 5 years ago. Not only is it one of the first episodes that they showed, but it's another special week. And it's a very special week. And really, up until maybe about 2 years ago, it was a very special week for a reason I'll mention next time. Greg, back to you.
Well, folks, that will do it for this week. But remember, you can always go to our website over at itwasathingontv.com, where you can listen to the 461 episodes that precede this one. We've got all sorts of great bonuses there, including mini-sodes, live shows, extended versions of previous episodes, the whole works. And remember, we are on all social media, including Instagram, Threads, and Mastodon, over at It Was a Thing on TV, except for Facebook, where we are at It Was a Thing on TV podcast. And remember, if you want to follow us on Mastodon, you got to search for us at It Was a Thing on TV at TVWatch.Party. And of course, the Friday drops right here at Place B Nation Pop Experience every week. And also, I actually didn't put the episode we did last week, which was, I keep forgetting, what did we do last week?
We did Iron Chef USA last week.
Oh, that's right. We did do Iron Chef USA last week. That's what happens when you do one a week's now. Keep forgetting. But I did release last week on the Pop Feed because it was overdue, the Star Trek 6 live show we did last December, Chico. That was fun.
Good times.
Good times. But yeah, this week's drop is the episode with Iron Chef USA and Life on Mars. But starting next week, you're going to start getting the one a week over at Place to Be Nation Pop. So just so you're clear on that. And remember to subscribe to the podcast wherever fine podcasts can be streamed, either Apple, TuneIn, iHeart, Audible, etc. And don't forget, we are on the YouTubes, where you can like and subscribe to our channel. And don't forget to hit that notification bell on YouTube to be informed of all future uploads on the channel, including what's coming up on the podcast next time. Oh, well, guys, all the way back in episode
216,
we covered the 1970s live-action version of this show for a certain movie. And now that certain movie, next week, is getting a sequel. So, to honor the sequel, we're going to be talking about the animated sequel series to the live-action show from the 1970s. And let me assure you, we are not going to get real in this episode.
I see what you did there.
What am I referring to? Well, you'll have to find out in our next episode of It Was a Thing on TV. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you with that when we try to make a certain call next week. Wow.
And now it's almost 28 minutes past midnight. Tomorrow evening at 7:35, BBC Two welcomes Delia Smith and her cookery program, Family Fare. Each Friday, she'll be preparing some simple and attractive dishes, and she begins by introducing us to what she calls convertible dishes, dishes that are fairly quick and cheap to make, and yet can be jazzed up to grace even the smartest dinner table. Family Fare is tomorrow at 7:35. Then, 10 minutes later, at 7:45, Heritage, a series of programs providing a spectacular and colourful look at some of Britain's most impressive ceremonies and places of interest. In tomorrow's programme, Robert Hardy visits the Royal Mews at Buckingham Palace, where, in a unique village atmosphere, are stabled the famous Windsor Grey and Cleveland Bay horses. The splendid carriages and the state cars are kept here also, including the magnificent glass coach, which will be used for the wedding of Princess Anne. A visit to the Royal Mews in Heritage on BBC Two tomorrow at 7:45. And now this is John Glover wishing you a very good night. Good night, everyone.